everyone. Today is June 26th, Monday. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a land use hearing. I'm going to read my statement that I have to, but if you have a cell phone, please put it on silent. I don't believe this is being televised. It shouldn't be. This meeting of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners will be conducted according to the Josephine County Land Use Hearing Rules found in Article 31 of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code and Section 197.763 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, which govern the conduct of all public hearings. A summary of the rules are as follows. Today's hearing is an appeal hearing from a decision made of the Josephine County Planning Director. Since the decision was made without a public hearing, the state law requires the hearing to be conducted as a de novo, completely new, open evidentiary hearing. The board is authorized to review all the testimony and evidence submitted to the planning director in making the decision. Planning staff will identify and explain the criteria and standards applicable to this request. Testimony and evidence is to be directed to the criteria and standards. If you feel other criteria or standards apply and are not identified, you must raise the issue to the chair for a ruling. If the chair rules the additional standards apply, then testimony and evidence may be directed to them. That's item number three. This is item number four. Clearly raise and explain your issues in this hearing in order to be understood by the board. Item number five, before conclusion of the hearing, any participant may request a continuance to submit new evidence or testimony. The board must decide to either grant the continuance or keep the record open. In either case, the period of time must be at least 7 days. During the time of the open record, anyone must submit additional written testimony or evidence. Item number six, all persons testifying are considered a witness unless the person asked to be considered as a party and the chair rules the person has party status. Party status is established in three ways. One, anyone who receives official mailed notice and testifies orally or in writing in this hearing. Way number two, anyone who testifies orally or in writing in this hearing who did not receive official mailed notice but establishes the use or enjoyment of their property is adversely affected by or impacts from this proposed use or development that is different from the public at large. And three, someone who is aggrieved by an adverse decision. The chair will wait until you finish testifying to make a ruling on your party status. Number seven, participants are obliged to know and follow the rules and procedures. The planning staff present has a copy of the rules. Number four, the first item on the agenda is as follows. It's in a statement of appeal. It's an appeal of the community development director, specifically the planning director's staff, decision. The appellant objects to condition 5.1. D of the county development director's decision to approve a request for a two-lot partition. The condition requires one shared approach for the two lots and is a requirement submitted by Public Works. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the board to hear this matter? Item number 10, does any member of the board wish to abstain from this matter?
No.
I do not either. I'll participate. The Josephine County Rural Land Development Code sets time limits for testimony. So we've got those set out. I guess I should read these. Proponents, applicants. Staff reports first, no time limit. Item number two is proponents. Applicant's case is 10 minutes. So then the applicant can call on expert witnesses for five, others in favor for five, questions of staff. It really doesn't have a time limit. That's the direction of the chair. Item number three is opponent's representative, if any, needs to be designated when they come forward. 10, opposition, expert witnesses, 5 minutes, others, 5 minutes, questions of staff at the direction of the chair. Four, then we'll go into staff and four agency comments. Applicants rebuttal, number five, 10 minutes. Opponents, sir rebuttal. If there's a representative, 5 minutes. Others is 5 minutes. Item number seven is the summation. Applicant or representative, and that's 5 minutes, or opponents, 5 minutes. Then there's a discussion. Close the record. Item number 10 is deliberations and decision. And then we'll close the hearing, item number 11. number 12, at the close of the hearing, a decision shall be made in the form of findings with the presiding officer of the hearing body designating who shall prepare the findings. Item number 13, the criteria for the decision in this hearing shall be presented by the planning staff and part of the staff report. We have Ms. Schwartz and planning director Julie Smeltzer here today. So go ahead and come forward and start us off. Apologize, I have a cold that's hanging on for dear life forever. Good morning, Ms. Schwartz. How are you?
Fabulous.
Good. Go ahead and pull that mic up. I'm sure we're recording this.
I don't even know if it is on.
Hello.
Oh, good, good. Okay. Definitely. Nora Schwartz, Josephine County Planning. The appeal that's before us today was filed by the property owners, Mr. and Mrs. Brothers. Let's see here. This is a vicinity map. Showing that the parcel in question has access off of Tequilma Road. It's outlined in red. It also shows the surrounding development and the respective zoning. I apologize, it's somewhat light on this front map. The back one seems a little bit more clear. You can see, as I use the pointer here, and again here, that all along the east side of Tequilma Road, the proposed partition appears to be in keeping with the lots that have already been partitioned in the area. We'll see a flag lot and then a front lot here, here, skip that one, here, as well as above. This is the basically same design that the applicants have proposed through their tentative plan. Going on, Mr. and Mrs. Brothers then did apply for a two-lot partition off of this lot that's identified. They received a decision of approval with conditions, and they are appealing the condition of growth of, I'm sorry, I'm not 100% today either myself. They are appealing the condition that requires them to share an approach for the two lots that are proposed here. Now, as we take a look at the next slide, this is the tentative plan that was submitted, and this is a much larger view. You'll see the flagpole to serve parcel 2 in the rear with a new proposed access here. I'll point it here as well.
Yeah, that's the screen that really
this
matters.
The
that's the
yeah.
one that matters. I mean, not that you guys don't, but you're not making this decision. We are.
Okay, I'm sorry. The other approach that serves this partition is an existing approach, which is right there. So we've got this one for the new parcel, this one that serves the existing development, which is in this area. So the conditions of approval, as they exist today, require both of these lots to share just one access point, which would mean then that in driving up to Kilmer Road and entering the parcel area here, there would have to be some way to find a pathway, however that might be determined, to serve this parcel too.
That's one version of a solution.
Yes. And we don't have a bottom line on that just yet. We just know about the one shared approach.
Because theoretically, they could abandon their approach right now and utilize the shared approach. In my mind, that would seem most
logical. Could they use the flagpole as a shared approach?
Theoretically, yes. But I think the bottom line for us is going to be, what is the separation distance which is requiring the one shared approach? I'll have Public Works speak to that specifically, but you can see that there's an approach here, a short distance down is the proposed, and then all the way down is the existing. So I would expect that the issue then is in this distance right here.
You, well, I'll wait to public
comment. That's basically just an outline of what this partition proposal is about. I can leave this up if you like.
Do you guys discuss with the applicant, at what point do you discuss this? You know, great, everybody else is doing that. It's zoned R5. It's 10.34 acres. You're going to have enough to do the driveway. What point does planning say you're going to need to utilize Public Works is going to want you to have one access point from this division? Is that going to be a problem? How are you going to work that out? You know, it seems as though the flag lot could have been established with the flag being the access point on the other side. Would that be the south side of the existing residential parcel? You know, and then you just, yeah. Is that possible? I mean, do you guys discuss that stuff with the applicant? This isn't a surprise, I hope, to the person that they're having to appeal this decision, because it's in the code and stuff like that.
I can tell you the sequence of events and when this became an issue or came up as a.
Yeah, I can read the sequence of events if you're going to do that. I've got that in the application on the front page. I'm just wondering, you know, in this pre-application style dialogue with them, it's really important that people kind of understand the challenge of, you know, dividing their property up front, and that it's clear from a planning staff. You guys don't necessarily have jurisdiction over this as a public works issue, but from a customer service standpoint, you guys are the first place to interact with them. So that they understand up front, yeah, no problem. You can do that. Everybody else is doing it above and below. And it's just ideally, we're going to like you to have one access, one driveway. And if not, if that doesn't work for you, you're going to have to appeal that to the board. All that stuff could be laid out fairly simply, I think, at the beginning. And I hope that's the case. We'll hear from the applicant whether or not that's their impression. But it wouldn't hurt if you had that understanding, or could say something about that right now?
I can.
Great.
When the pre-application material was distributed, the comment from Public Works was that if an approach was going to be shared, that there would have to be a reciprocal access easement shown on a final plan. That's standard. Almost to the day, a year later, which is within the time frame, the full application was distributed for comment. At that time, the requirement for a shared approach came up from Public Works. So initially, there was just a comment about if. It became a requirement a year and probably 1 month later when the full application came through. So during the pre-application process, there was no hard and fast stance taken that it would be a requirement. As I recall, I obviously have it in my file, the preliminary application comment came from the civil engineer, and then a year later when the full application came through, that comment was provided by the transportation planner, who is a member of the Public Works Department. I'm sure there were conversations back and forth during that time. I wasn't privy to them, but that was the time frame and the nature of the comments that took place.
Just seems like in the pre-application process that the applicant would have had, you know, some indication that this was, that may be for future, but I need that stuff, those conversations to start to happen between Public Works planning. That's a pretty important deal, and if we have to put these things geographically together, these offices, we will do that in, I think, a short order, if that's just the conversation that has to happen, you come from Public Works, so you've got a little bit of knowledge about how those processes go on over there, ideally here. Just want applicants to kind of have a pretty good indication that, you know, that's going to be one of those criteria. Not that you can't appeal that decision, that element to the board and get here today. I don't want to belabor the subject. I think Mr. DeYoung, Commissioner DeYoung's got questions as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map, you know, the vicinity map of surrounding zones and everything, and I see this. If I was going to do what the applicant wants to do and make a flag lot split off the back half of it, it looks like it's been done numerous times all along this road without a hitch. Do these other lots have more than one access onto them? The original lot, you've got a flag. On all of these, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them south and one of them north. Do all of them only have one access that feeds both lots? Or is there existing that where the front lot is fed off of Tecumseh Road and the flag pole comes off of Tecumseh Road?
I don't have that information with me. I believe that the applicant's representative may be able to speak to that. It's my belief in when I have looked at Google Maps that several of them do have two approaches.
Okay.
I could not point them out to you. I apologize.
It's hard when I went on Google Maps to really tell. The density of trees
is pretty high,
so you'd have to. And my memory of that road, I've driven it 1,000 times. I'm not really sure. It just seems like there's a fair number, but I can't really tell you.
Well, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I've never driven it, so I've got to go by this
yes,
map
you,
here.
You had it when you went out to the Dome School.
Yeah, but that was pouring down rain, and Sheriff and I were talking like a couple of school kids, and I didn't notice how far apart
the
driveways were. But that's one thing that concerned me. On the existing driveway, the distance from the existing driveway to the flagpole is how far? Our maps in here are a little fuzzy, and I couldn't read the footage on there. That probably might be better for Public Works to answer that.
I would appreciate them speaking to that as well as elaborating on their rationale their decision.
That's it for right now. I've got it. Did this thing just get kicked back and say, hey, you figure out how to make it one approach? Could they move the flagpole down to the other side of the lot? Because that would give them a straighter shot into their garage. Because I know they're talking about the garage. So in order to do that, they would have to loop around. And you said that you would use the existing driveway and then maybe go through their yard or branch off of that to the back lot.
Like an awful solution far as like traffic going through their place. The flag lot works really well, but
to my knowledge, there has been no specific discussion about what the alternative would be.
Okay, I didn't know if there was any suggestions flying around or anything of that sort.
I believe the applicant's representative Bob Hart has delved into that. I believe that is to some degree covered in the appeal.
And really, I guess that probably it's not even a question for this hearing because.
No, you can work that out.
Okay, all right.
Yep.
It being a de novo hearing,
beginning, and you approve this with, you can deny it, approve it with conditions, change it, whatever you want to do. What's that riparian designation through there? Is that just like a. They're not often accurate in maps like this, so I know that my parents' ranch probably has crow flies 4 or 5 miles. So it's got riparian stuff. It's 100 years ago was probably that way, but it isn't that way now.
Commissioner, you're right about that. I can also remark that as part of our application process, we seek the input of Department of State Lands, which has jurisdiction over wetlands. They have commented to me, I have it in writing, and I have shared it with the applicant's representative, Bob Hart. They are I would say 95, if not 100% sure, that that is no longer designated as a wetland. This is off of our somewhat antiquated PUMA
yeah.
map. But certainly because it was a red flag for us, we had to look into it.
Sure.
And that was the remark from DSL that...
The topography in that area, if I remember correctly, doesn't lend itself to that being something that's accurate anymore, probably. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we go with the proponents. So this is the applicant. And I believe we have Mr. Hart here representing the applicant. So you've got 10 minutes to present your case of appeal.
This has been a Monday. I was trying to do a PowerPoint presentation, and that didn't work this morning, so I printed it out.
We don't mind. Does it? Just that you cover the high points. Nope. I think you have to ask for that ahead of time. I don't know if you did.
Again, for the record, Bob Hart, 5126 West 7th Street, is asked by the applicant to represent them to appeal the condition of approval. As you know, I've been in the business for decades, started in 78, working both from within the county and as an outside planning consultant. This is a fairly recent situation with this type of driveway condition. And I'll get into that in a little bit. Because as you see from the development system, most of the lots are done with flag accesses. I have the selected criteria where planning went through very specifically and said, if you're going to do a flag lot, that flag has to physically be able to be improved and traverse to get to your building site. So you can't have a flag that, and you have an easement someplace else. They wanted to be assured that you would be able to have your own access. Because one of the problems planning has always had is when there are shared accesses, there gets to be neighbor squabbles over time. Well, you've got teenagers, and they use the driveway a whole lot more than I do, and you need to pay more than I do for its maintenance. And so they come to the county, saying, you need to intervene and help us. And the county says, no, it's not our problem. That's a civil matter. And so it's always been the policy of the county to try and make sure that every property had its own physical access on the property. As you can see from the plot plan on the next page, this was what was originally submitted with a flag lot showing where the driveway is to the existing dwelling. We go to the next two pages, which is the pre-app letter by board order. It's good for a year from when it was issued. And the second page of that is the Public Works comments. Public Works, in these comments 1 through 6, as summarized by Nora, yes, they said if you do share a driveway, you have to do reciprocal easements, but no time and no fashion or manner was it ever suggested to the planning from the planning office or even from Public Works that there be a mandatory shared driveway because of access issues. The next page is the actual tentative plan that was prepared by Peter Allen Surveying that shows essentially the same configuration with a bit more detail. The next page shows that the Kilma neighborhood, it shows that existing development pattern with flag lots is essentially a two-tier development pattern, some adjacent to the road and then another tier behind the road. The next page is the assessor's office that shows the Kilmer Road on the right-hand side, Rockydale on the left-hand side. So this is a typical pattern throughout the entire area. As you can see from all the partition plats that had county review and approval, it's flag lot in the back, regular lot in the front. I went to Public Works and asked them to explain the condition, and I was shown a manual that says, here's what we use. As you can see on the next page, the manual, what it says is an example of guidelines for access spacing on rural roads. This is not an adopted document by Josephine County. This is a guideline that's prepared by a federal agency. And the next page is a copy of ORS 374.309, because I was explaining, well, we're not using the ODOT standards anymore because there's been a change in state law that we can't use ODOT standards. And in 374.09, it mandates that the county commissioner shall adopt reasonable rules and regulations and may issue permits. The next page is a memo from Peter to Peter Allen from Chuck Desjardins from the Public Works Department. As you can see, it's dated in March 18th, 2016. He's putting together a draft to update the county road standards. And on the next page shows those proposed standards. It's my understanding that at this point, those standards have not been adopted. They're still in legal counsel's office for review. And if the change of state law happened in 2011 and we're just now getting around to adjusting those standards, it's kind of a day late and a dollar short. The next page shows Tequilma Road. The red lines represent driveways that exist here. Every lot has a separate driveway except for one up closer to Holland Loop, and that's because it's a property to the rear that has no physical access, but it was done by easement years and years ago.
Say that again, Mr. Hart, that's really important.
Every lot along Tequilma Road from, I think it's Holland Loop down past the subject property, every lot has its own physical driveway onto the property. There is only one shared driveway, and that is only because it is an easement access to a rear parcel. It has no frontage. We have some photographs that were taken of nearby properties. As you can see, at 5045 to 5047 Tequilma Road, the driveways are 23 feet apart. At 5151, 5209, they're 156 feet apart. 5251 to 5274, they're 8 feet apart. And 5401 to 5405, they're 142 feet apart, with 5405 to 5477, they're 26 feet apart. So that's the existing situation of driveways and their spacing. I went through the surveyor's office to check partition plats and see when this driveway combination started to take place. The first ones I found were in the middle of 2016. Prior to that, and I started in 2005 when the codes were adopted by Josephine County, that has nothing that mentions driveway spacing in the transportation plan. The only ones between 2005 and 2016, none of them had a requirement for a shared driveway. After 2016, it started to happen. It sounds like the Public Works started implementing, but we don't have a change of ordinance in 2016. It may be a great idea from an engineering standpoint, but that's not what the code says. That's not what the development pattern in the area has done, and that is not county policy in the way that they've done it for decades. We feel that the appeal is appropriate because it's not consistent with prior county acts. We don't feel that it is a violation of the county codes as far as what's adopted, and it is very consistent, and it says so in the conditions of approval that the access requirements of the county are met by the application as it was submitted. So for that basis, we appeal that condition and ask that you find in favor of the appellants. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Section in the book that we got that showed traffic accidents in that area, in that vicinity.
Yeah,
did you put that together? Or?
That comes from the traffic manual of Josephine County. I try to get more statistics to show what the conditions were in the area, just to have knowledge, is this a dangerous area or not. I'm not qualified to make a judgmental decision as far as safety. I'm not an engineer, but I just went to the accident patterns, and it shows most of them happened up at New Hope, or down at Waldo Road, or up at the top end of DeKilmer Road. I tried to find any more traffic accident statistics, went to Public Works, they said they don't have them anymore, called the Sheriff's Office, called OSP, called ODOT, and they were not available, so we don't know what's going on that way.
So I'm looking at it, I'm going to your map with all the red hash marks on it, which are driveway, existing driveway approaches.
Yes, sir.
So you didn't find anything where a guy, where a person pulled out onto the DeKilmer Road and got smacked by another car?
I didn't see any, because there was a mile marker as listed on in the county manual, and I tried to superimpose that on the roadway, but I don't have any additional information to show where that might have happened.
Is this whole thing on your study here with all the red line and Googling it, it looks like it's wooded, the whole stretch of that. That whole stretch of road, DeKilmer Road, is wooded.
That's correct. Except at the very top end, there's a couple of open fields at the top end, but not in the vicinity of this neighborhood.
Okay. The other side of the road is a lot of EFU?
That is EFU, 80 acres minimum lot size, and none of those properties can be further divided.
Topography is there's a shelf on that west side that's wooded, and then it drops down, and then there's EFU farmable land past that.
On the west side, yes, you've got DeKilmer Road, you've got the EFU, it drops down to the river, and then it flattens out on the other side.
Yep.
Okay, I don't think I have any more.
Me neither. Nope.
Thank
I
you
need
very
a.
Much.
2B, which is applicants, expert witnesses. Do you have any, Mr. Hart?
I have Peter Allen, the surveyor that prepared the tentative plan for the applicant.
I think expert is the operative word.
We
and there's Mr. Allen. Morning, sir.
Good morning. Peter Allen, 321 Northwest A Street. I'm the applicant's surveyor for the project, and I laid out the tentative plan and worked with them as far as the submittals go. And I guess as far as Commissioner Hare brought this up in the beginning there, and when we received the results of the decision, yes, the requirement for a shared driveway totally took us back. It was totally caught us off guard. It was totally unexpected as far as what we were expecting. The application was submitted, then went through the pre-app stage, and a typical layout that conformed to the existing development pattern was followed for the property. The applicant themselves had actually put together the pre-application, and I would expect that they laid that out to conform with their best, their knowledge of the property and for the best use of the property for what their intentions were. And again, like I say, there wasn't anything. There was a suggestion, as Ms. Schwartz mentioned there, that if a driveway approach was to be shared, but there was no mention of anything that would say that, yes, you are to share a driveway, that would be a requirement. And as Mr. Hart pointed out, in the past, in my years of experience in dealing with laying out lots and planning, the attitude has typically been that, yes, when you, the primary location for a driveway and an approach shall be at the flagpole. Usually we had to go out of our way to deviate from that. That was always, has always been the standard there, at least that we try and follow and use. Not to say that that always happens, but that's typically what we encounter there. So we all usually have to go out of our way to say, okay, this is a good location for a driveway, this is a good location where we have put the flagpole. I just, to me, it's not fair. It was sudden, it totally caught us off guard as far as what was expected, from what was expected and from any of the previous comments there. And, but to me, I just see a far-reaching implication of these access standards. And I understand that that's Public Works' job to recommend and make safety considerations, you know, setting safety considerations and make recommendations. But I see when we have a development such as this, where a lot of the properties that we are encountering now are infill projects. In an RR5 zone, your minimum average width is 300 feet. Well, if you have a 660 to 400 some foot driveway spacing, that doesn't work. And I know that you can do modifications, but to me, it's kind of being forced onto the applicant, and we need to have some cooperation, I think, between planning, the developer, the applicants, the owners, myself, the surveyors, to try and resolve these situations and these issues that are coming up. And I think that we're going to encounter these a lot more now as further development occurs. And so, I don't think that we can just take a manual national standard and just say, this is what we're going to do here, and then make it stick. But I think we have to also consider the outline and the surrounding circumstances that are involved with the individual property. So, anyway, that's all.
Did you do anything special for the applicant as a result of this need for an appeal?
We've had to spend a lot of time researching this. I mean, everything that
that's
I did.
That's what I mean. Did you go out and survey something else as a result of this? You already did what you...
We pretty much already had accomplished what we did. We may have made a few revisions as a result of that. But
what sort of
things? We've had to spend a lot of hours now to try and, on this appeal, basically, to deal with the situation.
What were you doing? I mean, what if they're really evaluating?
Evaluating, researching, having conversations with Public Works, planning, trying to resolve the issues. Like, hey, what can we do to, to make this work?
Okay.
When did the manual national standard, you said something about 2016, I think, is all of a sudden this thing popped up? Has the manual national standard been in, has it been around for years and years, and then we all of a sudden found it one day and decided, okay, we're going to...
That might be a good question for Public Works.
Public Works,
they're going to be up next.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'd rather not speak on that.
Yeah.
It'd
just be your speculation there.
Wouldn't want that.
We wouldn't want that.
Anything else?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Appreciate
it.
Any others in favor of the proponents, the applicants? So you'll get 5 minutes to speak if there's anyone who needs to testify on the applicant's behalf. Seeing none, I'll bring it to the opponents, which I would say is the position of the county for an appeal to this. I think you probably want to delegate Ms. Schwartz who you want to come forward on this element. I think Public Works would be a really pretty good person to have forward, Mr. Dijonet. So, really, we need to title these probably a little bit differently, proponents, opponents. I don't know that anybody's opposed to it. You're just putting up, a condition on this that is challenging for the applicant.
Yes. Good morning, Commissioner. Chuck Dijonet. I'm the county engineer.
Great.
You had some questions first, or you want me
I think you'd probably lead off and give us some background.
Some background?
Yeah.
First off, I would like to say that I'm not pro or anti-development. I cannot suggest a standard for an applicant. Otherwise, I'm then approving something that I've suggested. And you cannot, as a licensed engineer, you cannot review your own work. So, I do have draft standards that are up at legal, which may or may not make this easier. But in 2005, there was a system set up to appeal any engineering standard. And that was set up by the board, and that's in our engineering design standards. And that requires an engineer to submit something to me. And the reason why is, again, I cannot, as an engineer, approve something that I have suggested. So, to date, they have not submitted anything to me. I can't speak on the pre-op because that was someone else in my office that reviewed that pre-op. I don't know what was submitted. I don't know what the comment was.
How do you not know, Mr. Dijonet? That's, you're the engineer for the county.
The civil engineer.
Somebody else in your office is what you said?
Yes. He's unable to make it today. So.
But that's still your responsibility. I see that as the county engineer.
I don't review every application that comes through.
Okay. Yeah, but it's a position of your office because it's a position of the county.
It is. And
okay.
I take credit for whatever
okay.
he did.
Whether or not you reviewed it or not, that's your position.
But I can't say why he made that.
Okay.
So, then, you know, yes, there are accesses that don't meet current standards. But then again, do we want, you know, Highway 99 to be there in place of I-5? I mean, there are improvements over time. So, you know, is the 600 feet spacing correct? I don't know. But again, I can't suggest something.
Where is that in our standards?
Our standards, basically, as a county, we adopt by reference national standards, such as we don't have in our standards the size, color, and shape of the stop sign.
I know you've used that example in the past, but that's a little bit extreme on the asinine side. We do have we have standards within our code, Article 76, regarding fire width and stuff. That's been an LDAC recommendation that we address that. There are standards here locally, so let's just drill down to that.
The Land Development Code standards are not enforced by my office, but we do have some items in there I'm not.
Yeah, there are road standards in our RLDC, and I think that's important. That
but they're not for the maintained county roads.
This isn't. They're not for the maintained. This is not a maintained county road. This is a
Kilmer Road?
No. The road that they're looking to put in, the access point to Kilmer Road.
But the access point is on Kilmer Road.
Okay.
And that's the portion I look at.
My concern is that you're applying something that's fairly arbitrary. In the other sense is that there's probably an ability to go out there and find another standard that you could apply in this situation. And what's there to say that standard is better than this standard, or it's your discretion is the challenge, perhaps, in that situation?
I went through the national standards because mm-hmm. we couldn't just use, you know, city of that groups or somebody's just because there's no nexus for us to use those local standards as an adopted standard.
I need to make sure I can hear you, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. You want me to repeat that? Or
no, I think I could hear it. Could you hear it? So there's no nexus other
that.
Than the regional aspect that those are that's in proximity?
Well, there's no nexus for me to use that. It's not that we can't look at those, but again, that's something that's usually either submitted by an applicant or that's something that I've submitted into the proposed standards.
Sure. It just seems to me like a national standard is so much farther removed from what's actually locally applicable to the region. If Medford, probably a bad example, but if Jackson County, for instance, were utilizing a road standard that was adopted, I don't see that as being all that much different and maybe more applicable regionally than a national standard that really has very little local application. I mean, it wasn't developed locally. It's not governed by state law.
And I did look at those ones.
Okay.
You know, my concern is the manual of national standards. You know, that's looking for way, way, way up. You know, that takes into consideration corn farms in the wheat fields up in the northern end of the state and hay fields over in Hardy County and stuff.
Not even sure a national standard would have Oregon on its map.
And that's probably true. To sort of fall back on that, say national standard, are these standards, are they law, or are they recommendations, or are they requirements? I'm fuzzy here on what is actually a requirement or a recommendation. It's recommended that you look at sharing and access, or is it written down somewhere in some code or something that actually states you will double up on a flagpole?
If it was a requirement, we could not have separate standards at any time.
So it's not a requirement.
So for them to join these two driveways is a recommendation.
The access spacing is the recommendation.
Okay. But I'm looking because I looked at the 650 feet, that's 2 football fields between driveways. And if I'm just going to go as John Q. Public, and how many times are these two houses going to approach the road to become a hazard of any kind at all, you know, in a month's time? And then what's the odds of them having traffic onto Gilmer Road that when they get out to it? You know, we're talking a very short period of time. This isn't F Street merging onto 6th Street. This is a driveway with one family on it, and even if they had teenagers, it came and went a lot. I'm wondering why, you know, what's the point? Is what I'm in. And if I pull up there and I look down at two football fields down the road, there's a pickup truck coming. That's my choice. Well, I'll pull out. I get plenty of time to pull out, or I'll wait. But that's two football fields. That's a long ways between driveways, and it's not consistent. It's not consistent with the map that Mr. Hart put out, that there's one every sometimes, 10 feet apart. There's a deal in here that says you're never going to put two driveways next to each other on a flag, but there's a couple of instances where there's a driveway, a fence, and a driveway because the two flag poles are sitting next to each other. So I don't know how that happened. You know, if it was a recommendation to not put two flag poles adjacent to each other, and it just happened that way, or it was done well before we even started looking at it.
It was well before my time.
Was it? Okay. Well, wow. Before my time, too.
So I
just wonder how, because I see two of them on here down at the bottom that are like that. So are they violations? I can't say that. They're common sense.
No,
you know, that's just the way it worked out at the time. And I haven't seen any traffic reports that say, well, you put those two flagpoles next together, man, you have just got yourself a traffic hazard. And the county's going to be liable if something happens at that intersection. So I don't know, but I hear, again, in defense of your department, it is not for you, it's for you to follow the rules, not make them up as you go along. And I appreciate that. But that's why we have an appeals process, so that, you know, hopefully, you know, because a lot of times what you're looking at, and you know darn well it's common sense did not prevail when somebody wrote that. Maybe you might think the 650-foot mark, but I think it fits somewhere in America, but I don't think it fits on the full road.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you have not seen my draft standards, but they are less.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not the road authority that would adopt those standards. So
yeah, exactly.
I can't apply those at this point.
Okay. So I was just wondering on that manual and national standard, is that something that we looked at 2 or 3 years ago, or somebody called you and said, hey, you know, there's a manual of national standards, or...
What happened was, and I'm going to get the dates wrong because I'm going off my memory. I'll probably have them down. But around 2011, there was a state law that we would have to use ODOT standards for access spacing. And the state law basically said that we had to adopt our own. So we started the process, and then development really slowed down, so there wasn't a lot of, for whatever reason, those other things coming up. So when we did get around to providing a draft to legal, it was several weeks later, but in the interim, you have to have something. You can't just say, put the driveways where. I mean, I think everyone would agree that if it's in a hazardous location, you can't put it there. But again, it's not my place as a county engineer to tell a developer, I think that's a good location, without them submitting something to me.
So we never did finish that project of adopting our own standard.
It's up at legal. It's been there for a while.
It's illegal. That might be something we want to drag back out of the closet and take a look at.
Is this the only recommended standard that you could, you know, look in your books? I've seen the books, Mr. Desjardins. They're quite large.
Yeah.
What other kind of standards? Why do we just go with the 650? Why couldn't we have found something?
That's
I'm sure
right.
There's a recommendation in that those standard guidelines that probably is different than the 650.
That's what I was able to find. I'm not saying there's not one out there, but that's what I was.
And you have another reason why you couldn't use a local standard, something that Jackson County uses, or
the board would have to direct
you. The board didn't direct you to use the 650-foot standard in the national standard guidelines.
They did through the previous standards. They said, here's the criteria. If we don't have a written standard, then we're
going to
have
one. So the national.
We've done that. So we adopted national standards. That's what I'm saying.
We didn't adopt national standards in regards.
It's a default.
It's a default.
With nothing else in between us, nothing, there's nothing between us having our own countywide standard and the national default. There's no state doesn't weigh
the
in.
State would, you could use ODOT, but in this case, it's a state law that says we have to adopt our
But ODOT's own. Mostly Oregon State Highways, not,
yeah.
Or do they have jurisdiction?
Yeah, they have jurisdiction. I mean, they have roads like 238 or other roads, Lower River Road, that have access.
Is it Kilmer Road?
Yeah. That have access issues, so they definitely have that. I don't want to see another one of these again. This is a giant waste of my time, the applicant's time, and I apologize if I'm going to get frustrated, but if I see another one of these, I'm not going to hold a hearing. I'm going to reverse the... I just don't want to do it. This is a giant waste of my weekend that I spent reviewing this morning. I've got other things to do, and so you've got to figure out a way to get this fixed, engineering-wise, through legal. Bypass legal. Bring it to the board. I don't care what it takes. I want something before the end of the month, a version of your draft. So I'm really frustrated. Thank you, Mr. Dijonvay. Do you have anything else?
I think you summed it up.
Yeah.
And if I make
yes.
As well.
I know. Appreciate that. So thank you very much. We're going to move forward. I'm going to suspend the rules and procedures. I'm going to make a motion that we... approve the appeal and grant the other access point, the flag lot with the existing access, whatever that takes. So that's my motion, and we're going to have the applicant provide those findings. So
I think there was a page or two in here about meeting standards where they come off of the road is kind of filled in a ditch and so on and so forth. All those need to be brought up and brought up to stuff where it's acceptable. Is that is in the county's right of way.
Yeah, the approach has to be done correctly.
Yeah, it has to be done. Permitted and
yeah.
Everything else. So
25 feet, all that. I'm also going to refund the appeal application money. I think that comes through planning, but Public Works, however that is, reimbursed. I think that... That's what we're going to do here. My recommendation?
I second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 2-0. Commissioner Morgan is not here today. I really want to just say we got to get this figured out. This is the second one in a month, and I know it's not a good use of your time, the appellant's time, planning's time. Our surveyor, our esteemed surveyor, he's pulling out a huge salary, so we gotta make sure we use his time wisely. And I know that's not your intent, Mr. Dijonvay, to hold up development, but I mean, this one just makes so much sense that everybody else, there isn't a consistent person within 2 miles, it looks like, of that area. And so we're willing, I know the liaison to Public Works is definitely willing on working and leaning into any kind of redraft temporary order from the board to give guidance to your office about, you know, making this a little bit more of a streamlined process and not arduous and taking up all this appellant time for a hearing. It's an important issue, and we want to have safety at the highest level in Josephine County, but when we're looking at these kinds of things, really not making a whole lot of a safety improvement, especially on a straightaway like that road. The biggest thing that people need to be aware of in that area is deer. It's not probably ingress and egress of driveways. So I really appreciate everybody's time here this morning, but let's hope that this is the last time we have to do one of these. Otherwise, we'll figure out a better standard to apply here locally. Anything further?
Nope.
The board's adjourned at 9:54. Thank you so much.